Welcome to Software Testing Unleashed, the podcast for testers, test automation engineers, developers, and all people who want to create great quality software. My name is Richie. I'm a software quality coach, keynote speaker, author, and podcaster, obviously. My guest today is Callum Akers-Ryan. He is a quality coach with nearly 20 years of experience across a range of different industries and development methodology. We talk today about one of his favorite topics, about exploratory testing. How can we use it? What strategies and methods are usable within exploratory testing? And what should we take care about when we implement exploratory testing? And now, enjoy the episode. And one thing I want to share with you before the episode. It's the question, do we sometimes test too much? I see this a lot with my clients. Tests run and run and run and run, but in the end they don't find any bugs. They just slow down the whole process and even unnecessarily delay the releases. That's really frustrating. And let's be real, if developers are really going for it with agentic engineering now, we need some quick feedback. If you want to know more about this, I suggest checking out TeamScale's free online workshop. There you'll learn 4 ways to find as many bugs as possible as quickly as possible. You should definitely have a look at that. You'll find more info in the show notes and under tul.fm/team. And now, enjoy the episode. Hi, Callum. Great to have you on the show here.
Hi. Thank you so much, Richie. Yeah, it's great to be here.
Yeah, it's so nice. We had a long history now when we tried to get this to this meeting today, but finally, we've done it.
Yeah, hopefully it's all worth it. And we get to have a great conversation. Like, it's been like 2 or 3 months of us trying to organize this,
yeah,
isn't it?
So. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. But now we get it. And you have a very interesting topic. And I think that's very interesting for the community too. And so we will talk today about exploratory testing. And I know exploratory testing a long time now in my career. And I see a lot of clients doing something and call it exploratory testing, but yeah, it's not really that thing that I think it is. So, but from your point of view, how would you describe exploratory testing in a few sentences to get us into the topic?
Yeah, so for me, exploratory testing is running experiments and looking for information that helps us confirm or learn about the unknown. It's different from more traditional styles of testing where we can say, we would like this thing to happen. Did it happen? Yes or no? Instead, it's a technique in testing we use to say, we don't know anything about, let's say, performance. We don't know what's happening in performance. And also, we don't have a benchmark for performance at the moment. So we will run experiments and we will find out information about that would inform our views on quality. So it's less about saying yes or no to something. It's more about finding the information that can inform whether or not we say yes or no later on.
Mm. So it's typically when we have no expected result or no requirement, we can challenge in a test.
Exactly. It's exactly as you said, we don't have an expectation. We don't even have a requirement about something. It just allows us to basically find out information and de-risk things where there's the most amount of risks, where things are unknown or they haven't been thought about. So it's a really useful technique that you can use in a lot of different ways. And key to that is trying to understand that exploratory testing doesn't just mean like fuck around and find out. It doesn't just mean random or chaos. It can mean that, but you can structure it. You can be quite planned in your approach around exploratory testing. Quite often when people think about exploratory testing, their experience of it is related to, say, a bug bash, where you ask users to come in and just push all the buttons and see what happens, and maybe some defects fall out, right? It's a bug hunt. But exploratory testing can be that. That's a method of it, but it's a spectrum. Like any form of testing, it's a spectrum from that all the way through to something really planned and technical. And there are some people out there who are using AI and automation to run some of their exploratory testing as well. So it can be, yeah, it doesn't even have to be something that's just manual. So when we talk about exploratory testing, it's any types of like investigative or experimental work we do to just find out information related to quality where things are unknown, we don't have an expected result.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think? You say it's a broad approaches. What are the typical scenarios and approaches you use and you have good experiences in exploratory testing?
Yeah, a lot of them come down to, so I work, my context is that I work as a quality engineer, and I'm the only quality engineer in the organization that I work for. And I have to work a lot with software development engineers of all different levels. And a lot of the time when I'm doing exploratory testing, it can fall into a few different areas. One of them is shift left. We explore to uncover and discuss risks about what we might build in the future. So I explore without really pass or fail criteria, designs or user stories or architecture documents, anything like that I can explore. It might be that I look at code or features or software that's developed to look up edge cases. Because I work a lot with engineers, they like thinking of happy path. They like thinking of, what can I unit test for? What can I get the smallest amount of tests for? So a lot of stuff we'll be investigating through the system to look at edge cases for things and find where things can go wrong. And the last place that I use it a lot at the moment is retrofitting non-functional requirements. Lots and lots of organizations, and I don't know if this speaks to you or if you've seen this as well, lots of organizations have built a lot of software and have never thought about their non-functional requirements. And they have no idea about security, performance, maintainability, usability, grokability, accessibility, learnability of code, deployability. And so the first place to help people understand that is to explore, not with a requirement in mind and saying you have to meet this threshold, but just to go, I've looked at the system and I've uncovered this information about it. Like it's this secure in these areas, or there are these vulnerabilities. Page loading is this fast, except for these things. It can handle this many people. In fact, this week, I've been doing a lot of performance testing, not because anyone asked me, but because I saw a risk and I needed to find information to put in front of people to say, hey, can our architecture handle certain loads? Turns out we're good. But it's important. So those are the main three areas that I tend to use it in my job day to day.
I think it's very it's very often the case that we don't have the required information that we can test against them, and to do some such approach to get these informations out of the system and to get some information for our team and the developers and all the stuff here. Yeah,
I agree. I find that a lot of the times at different organizations, there are less quality experts in organizations now. We're seeing that maybe a company will have one or two dedicated testers or quality engineers. And that means that we've lost a lot of like knowledge of like, what does good look like for software? So you've got architects, other engineers, or product people who just forget about these things. It's not top of mind. They want to deliver value, but they forget that features and functionality aren't the only way to get value. So they just need a bit of help, and they've forgotten to implement some of those things, or they thought they'd add it later, or they thought it came for free. So yeah, quite often, at quite a lot of organizations, you'll come in and there won't be requirements for things. There won't be requirements for non-functionals, or even thinking about edge cases. or thinking of negative scenarios to things, quite often they just are not captured. And especially at startups and scale-ups, you find that a lot because you don't really need, people think you don't need them because you're not maturing as a product. You just want to put things out there quickly. You'll get feedback from customers if things aren't working. So you're not doing a lot of that exploration. You're letting the customers do that. And it's a valid approach. It's worth noting that's completely valid. It's just that that's the reasoning why a lot of these things are not documented. So when you come in as a quality expert, you end up in a situation going, ah, there's nothing I can, okay, maybe I need to look at this myself. And that's where exploration really helps.
Yeah. I think it's very, very worthful. So when, let's go one level deeper. So when you do your exploratory test, do you have any best practices for us on for the people, for the process in detail, for the time frame and documentation out of it? So to give us some more, some more insight there.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Elizabeth Hendrickson's book, Explore It. And in that, she sets out some really good ways for structuring your exploratory testing. Exploratory testing, by its just virtue of what it is, can be quite fragmented. It could take forever. You could test everything, right? You need to find ways of going, what's important and what matters to the team? And how do I make it so that I can work on other things so that I'm not just forever looking at something? And the way that Elizabeth Hendrickson talks about it is to say, cool, we need a scope of our testing, of our exploration that's based on risks, and then we need to time box that. And that will focus us to allow us to, one, prioritize what we're looking at, make sure we're looking for risks that are important to the team, or two, it allows us to then be able to work on lots of things and not just get really stuck in getting excited about something. I add the third thing to that, which is taking your ego out of the equation as well. So make sure that you're thinking about finding information that's really helpful and works with your team rather than trying to prove that you're correct or prove that you're a good tester. Whenever I talk about exploratory testing and how to structure it to other quality experts, I usually say, it might be very exciting that when Venus is in alignment with Mercury, and you're a Leo is your star sign, and that you are eating lime gelatin, it might be very exciting that the system doesn't work, but that's such a weird edge case that no one will ever fix it. So you need to have a view of what do people care about as well to help influence your testing. So with those three things, what do we care about? What's important to us as a team? What will we fix? We can then drive out what risks and what scope of our testing can we have? And then we can give ourselves an amount of time to look into that. And effectively, that just like narrows our playground in which we explore in, because then we can find really useful information. The team's going to help, you know, like that. And you're working well with your team as well, because you're finding things they care about. And because you've time boxed it, you've also found things that in a timely manner so that people can fix it when it matters to them as well. Just to give like a practical explanation of like, if you don't do that, when you think about bug bashes, I'm sure you've run bug bashes before, right? You've got customers to do testing. When they just click around randomly, what do they find? They either find things that they personally don't like. Oh, I don't like that it's blue. I like the color green. Or they find really basic things at the surface level and don't go deeper because they go quite wide on things. They find lots of really basic issues that were easy to find. You're not finding anything deeper. By having a really narrowed scope, by saying, here's my playground, and I'm going to take an hour just in this playground, that's when you go deeper and you find important bugs as well. So that's why that's important. And we can use the example of a bug bash as to why depth is important, not just breadth.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's also for avoiding to get stuck on a single piece which no one cares, and to deal around with that 2 hours and deal with that. So to always to look at this perspective, what is my playground there? And I have to deal with that in this time frame. Yeah.
Very much so. And when you start getting stuck on things as well, sometimes those things we don't care about. Sometimes we do, though. And it's perfectly valid. Like, I find my structure of my testing, if I've finished my hour in my playground, in my area, to go back to the team, it gives me my cutoff time to talk to the team and say, hey, I got stuck in this area. I think there's something there. Would we care about that? And if so, I can spend another hour looking at it. If everyone goes, we wouldn't have cared, I've saved myself an extra hour and I can look at something else. So I think having that dedicated, I stop after an hour, then I talk to people. Do we care about looking deeper into this, or are we good enough at this point?
Mm-hmm. When we think about implementing this into a team or something like that, they are doing a lot of structure testing. How to begin, and how much time should we spend in the beginning into exploratory testing? So that we don't come there to do 3 weeks just exploratory testing and then come back or something. Do you have any experience in that?
Yeah. So my experience has been being the only tester in a team. So there's not a lot of my time to spend doing 3 weeks of exploratory testing. What I tend to do is I try to move my testing early to stop bugs happening, or to help engineers think about risks as well. So when a ticket is created, when we have a user story with acceptance criteria, I use Three Amigos, or you might call it Power of Three, or story shaping or story refinement, to think up risks and say, hey, what happens in a negative case here? What happens if this? What happens if, you know, for performance of this? That starts engineers thinking of trying to fix for those problems. So that's a good way of getting started, is having those conversations and starting to get people used to the idea of working with risks. Additionally to that, you can look at a ticket that's already been created and create documentation. I used to make mind maps, those sort of diagrams with all the different risks, breakdown of area, look at risks and say, cool, at the API layer, here are the things that could go wrong. At the UI layer, here are the things that could go wrong, performance, security. And again, then when we're picking up and working on the ticket, those are things that have already been identified and thought about. And then if I wanted to be really hands-on and help people enact some exploratory testing, I would usually pair with them and I'd say, look, what's the most important things that we care about? So by looking at the risks, documenting those risks, we've then got a document we can say, team, which of these things do we care about as a team? What matters to us? What should we explore for in these areas of risk? And then use that to drive our sort of testing effectively. And we can say, look, we'll spend 3 hours total. We'll look at these three areas, that, that, and that. Brilliant. And then work with them to work with the team to explore. I think the key to it is not trying to do everything and not trying to be perfect all at once. Because you mentioned like 3 weeks of testing, right? You could. Like, I was talking to people on LinkedIn about this the other day, and I said, you cannot test every scenario. You cannot. So you have to focus on what matters. If you think of a field with a 100 character long field, the amount of combinations of characters that could exist for a 100 character long field with the character sets and regexes that are available to us, there are more combinations than would exist for seconds of the universe. So you cannot, if each test took a second, you cannot, because the universe hasn't lasted as long as that, just for one field. So you can't exhaustively test things. So you have to be able to go, right, what matters, what's important, and prioritizing really focuses us on that. So it's important for us to be able to talk about not trying to do everything, not trying to be exhaustive, not doing 3 weeks, and sharing that view with the people we're working with as well. Saying good enough looks like, we'll spend an hour on it, see what comes out of it, and then decide based on that.
Yeah, yeah. Great advice. Thank you for that. So when we come to the documentation, so when we get information out of nothing, so do you have any recommendation on how to document our outcomes on the one side, but also what we tested, especially in the session, not to do it again next week because we cannot remember on that?
Yeah. So your context is going to be really important here. A lot of time when we think about testing and we think about concepts about documentation in testing, we think about auditability. We think about what works in the finance sector or in banking, because that's where a lot of testing is grown from. So we always think you have to have test evidence, you have to have screenshots, you have to have things. And that's not always true for a lot of organizations. In fact, your outcomes and your reports on testing, what lives from your testing, could just be the defects and the conversations and the knowledge that you gained as a team, which you could document very briefly in a like a Slack channel, in a Teams call. You could document it on a wiki page. You need to just like look at the level of testing that you need. If you're working very agile and it's just the code will document what we've decided, we'll make it more performant off the back of this, or we'll build another ticket to do that, or we'll write more unit tests around what we found or fix the code. That could be the documentation that comes out of these things. That's a valid approach to things, and that's in a very unregulated environment. But other things that we can do, there are lots of different ways of documenting things out there. Some people record videos of what they've done, and they watch them back to say, hey, look, here are the things that I've done. Some people take test notes as they're going. That works really well if you're pairing with someone, because someone can be driving the screen, the other person can be writing it down, and then you formulate that into something more meaningful. Like, we did these things and saw these things. It could just be that afterwards, after your hour, you create a short report on things, which is what I tend to do. I create a short report off of my observations. I take notes as I go, but very brief ones. I've usually got like a pad of paper and a pen with me to say, here are the things that I've looked at. I distill that into like the important points, basically, to say like, I looked at all these things, they were good. Here are the things I have questions on. Here are the things that might be a problem. And then I use that to have a conversation with my team. Anything that comes off the back of that is then like captured on tickets or captured just on a wiki page or something to say, hey, look, here are the things that we've learned. When it comes to not repeating tests, because that was a question that you had, I would say exploratory testing is a bad way of doing repeatable tests. So the usual, when I diagram things out, I usually say, I have like a line that goes from known to the unknown, and we do exploratory testing when things are unknown. But from the unknown, we get information that makes things known, and anything that's known is perfect for scripted or automated tests. So the best way to stop yourself from, you know, looking in the same area or running the same tests again is to turn them into automated tests at the code level or at the feature level, wherever you want that to be, if it matters. So then that's a regression suite there. If you're having to do a big manual regression suite via exploratory testing, then it's you're going to drift because you won't do things the same way each time. And that might be okay. You might still say, I need to hit these major points. I'll do them in different ways. Maybe I'll shake out different information about it. You probably won't, but maybe you will. But it's just not the best use of time.
Yeah. Great. It's a very, very, very important part to think of the perspective of exploratory testing, that we deal with the unknown and not with. It's not a replacement for our structured testing because it doesn't fit there. So, but it can be preparation of doing some scripting or a structured test afterwards with the known stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, lots of teams fall into the trap of not wanting to plan their tests for structured testing and just go, oh, we'll do exploratory testing to basically not have to document anything. we won't write tests, we won't automate, we will just do exploratory testing. We'll take 2 weeks at the end of a month and do whatever and see what happens. And that's an approach, but it's not the most effective approach in terms of your testing strategy. And I think that's what a lot of us have experienced, is exploratory testing used in the wrong ways to do that sort of, I won't script things, I won't automate things, I will manually explore, not have a plan for things where I already know that I want to confirm things.
You mentioned at the beginning the connection between exploratory testing and AI and automation. Can we can the flashlight on this topic too? What's in there for us with all the AI stuff?
Yeah, this is a really burgeoning field. It's really new. I'm not going to claim to be an expert in this area, but there are different tools that people are starting to play with, starting to explore with. So Playwright has good integrations to different language models. And theoretically, and I've seen it used once or twice, but not in the large, and it's something that I need to look into a bit more. But theoretically, you can basically use your AI tooling to say, hey, look, here's a website. Using the tools that Playwright give us, so the ability to use the browser, explore and spider this website, identify workflows and document them. So if you think of vulnerability scanners in security, like OWASP, ZAP, which spider through websites and try to identify everything, we can basically use Playwright with the AI to say, hey, do that, but for the functionality of my website, and identify the common processes and so on, and document what's there. And that can be a way of exploring to retrofit automation in our tests, because then you can rerun it. Now, you're going to get some good, you're going to get some bad from that, but it's a good starting point.
It could be a very, very nice input for us as a tester to, but it doesn't help. We have to think about what is the outcome, and we have to deal with that too. Or what does the tools deliver then, and to reflect that and not just take them and say, okay, this is the truth.
You can, in some situations, do that, though. There's a concept called golden master testing, where you basically just go, the tool has been in production, the tool is the tool. Therefore, whatever the tool does, we're just going to write tests to confirm that it keeps doing that. Whether or not that was the intention or not, we don't have the requirements anymore. The tickets were short-lived, they've gone away. Maybe the product owner is like doesn't have the time to tell us these things. Fine, we'll use tests to just document what exists currently. And that's usually when we have to retrofit regression tests, like exploring to just go, it currently does these things, and then we'll just write tests off the back of it. And that's golden master testing, basically confirming the behavior that's already there. Software engineers do the same thing when retrofitting code-based tests. It's called characterization testing. They explore the code and go, okay, the code behavior, the code logic is this. I'll just write in a test that says what I've learned from what the code currently does. Doesn't matter what was intended, doesn't matter what was architected. We're just going to assume the code is live, therefore it is the product. We'll just add in tests for that. So there is an approach to that. So you're right in that it's not, again, the best because we're not testing for the intention behind what the code was supposed to do or the product was supposed to do. But we can make improvements by testing what it does do and making sure it doesn't change from that. So there's an approach there. And I think that's where exploration using AI really helps us, is to say, hey, what does this thing do? Pull that out for me, and then let's use that.
Yeah. Great approach, and I think we can deal with all the AI tools much more in the testing area in the next years. And we have to deal with that, and we can use them. And as you described, it's very useful for some situations. Yeah. Yeah, Callum, thank you very much for your insights here into this topic. I think we gave a brief overview of this idea and going into it and inspire some people to try it out on their non-functional requirements or not requirements and to explore them and to try it out. And we put your contact details also in the show notes. So if anyone has a question or something like that, I'm sure you will answer that. For them.
Completely. Yeah, definitely. People can reach out to me to talk about exploratory testing or look on my blog. I have a lot of like materials on there where I've spoken about exploratory testing to developers or how I use it in different areas of quality engineering.
Yeah, that's great. So thank you very much. Have a good day and a good year. And hopefully we will see in person this year too on some conference or something like that. Would be nice to chat with you in person too.
Definitely. Yeah, that'd be great to meet with you. I need to come to more conferences.
Yeah, you should.
This year. But yeah, definitely. No, thank you so much for having me, Richard.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.